Peter B. Collins with news and comment here on Monday, April 2nd. Grizzly news from one of the toughest cities in California today, Oakland, the scene of a mass shooting where a killer opened fire at a Christian university that most of us had never heard of before. It's called Oikos. And at this hour, seven people are dead, three at least reported wounded. A gunman has allegedly been taken into custody, but I don't have more details than that at this time. It just seems to be one of those tragedies that come with the combination of guns and guns. And obviously this is a tragic case, likely to be a deranged individual. It is suspected the shooter was a student at this school, which was founded by a Korean and offers vocational training. Nursing is one of the programs. And certainly we'll hear more about that as the investigation will move forward. Also today in Oakland, before the shooting, federal authorities moved in to raid the Oaksterdam University campus. This is in downtown Oakland, and Oaksterdam is a center to promote medical marijuana, the cultivation of various strains of cannabis, and the legal distribution thereof. And this is another effort that is so politicized as the Obama administration turns on its assurances to medical pot providers that were made just a few years ago that they would basically take no action at the federal level. And while we have murderers on the streets of Oakland, and not only this killing spree, but at least two people were killed in separate incidents over the weekend, this is a real misuse of federal law enforcement. Now, I know that the federal cops and the IRS who are cracking down on Oaksterdam don't have anything to do with local shootings and that kind of crime. But the misplaced use of these resources and the effort to crack down on medical pot in a community where I think it's likely to be a pacifier and not a source of the ongoing conflict there. Across the bay, Occupy protesters on April Fool's Day took control and inhabited a vacant building in San Francisco that is owned by the Catholic Archdiocese. And at this hour, which is about approaching 3:30 on Monday afternoon Pacific time, I understand that San Francisco police have cordoned off the area. They are not so far rousting the occupiers, but they're letting no one else into the building. And so it seems that some sort of showdown will occur. The Occupy protesters have asked to speak with the Catholic Church, with the Archbishop. And if he says they've got to go, they're saying, well, they just might do that. The Supreme Court today, in another step toward a robust police state, ruled 5-4 that you may be strip searched for any offense, however minor, before you are admitted to a jail, even if officials have no reason to suspect that you've got something up your butt in the form of contraband or a weapon or anything like that. And the swing vote once again was Justice Anthony Kennedy, the moderate Republican. And he said, well, courts are in no position to second-guess the judgments of correctional officials. And this deference to the police, time and time again, is something that we will see 10 or 20 years from now as a low point in American justice. That is, unless we're so far gone that this is some sort of a high water mark. But I can only shake my head. Justice Breyer, writing for the dissenters, said strip searches are a serious affront to human dignity and individual privacy and should only be used when there is good reason to do so. In Wisconsin, the Badger State has finally approved the recall procedure, an attempt to remove Governor Scott Walker, the Koch brothers' favorite son, from office. And a couple of interesting developments there. By the rules in Wisconsin, Scott Walker was able to raise unlimited amounts for the recall campaign until it technically qualified and dates were set for the first and second rounds of this recall. And so he picked up $100,000 from Foster Freeze, the sugar daddy of Rick Santorum. He picked up $100,000 from Trevor Rees Jones, who is the Dallas president of Chief Oil and Gas. Bob J. Perry put in $500,000. He was the Swift Boat guy who clobbered John Kerry back in 2004. So Walker has collected, he collected a total of $11 million in his campaign for office back in 2010, and they expect that $60 to $80 million will be spent altogether in this historic Wisconsin recall effort. And one of the surprises is on the day of qualification, the mayor of Milwaukee, who had lost narrowly to Scott Walker in the 2010 election, has thrown his hat into the ring. And that's going to make things more complicated. He is Mayor Tom Barrett of Milwaukee. The other Democrats already in the race, Kathleen Falk, who is a county executive, Doug La Follette, the Secretary of State, and State Senator Kathleen Vinehout. So it's going to be a very interesting process and certainly one to watch, a real barometer of political action in this important election year. We learned on Friday that Keith Olbermann was fired by Joel Hyatt and Al Gore, the people who are the funders and owners of Current TV. And I have to say it's not a surprise. Keith Olbermann is a difficult guy to work with. And Current TV did not deliver, particularly on the technical side. And I remember watching an episode just a couple of months ago when right in the middle of the show, Keith was talking and the lights on the set just went out. There was another time when, in the middle of a segment, they cut to a commercial break right as Keith Olbermann was talking. So, as somebody who has been behind the microphone and in front of the camera and lived through many technical problems, I sympathize with Olbermann. And knowing really relatively little about the behind-the-scenes persona of Mr. Olbermann, I can understand why they parted ways. Here in San Francisco, the uber-liberal Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals once again turned back the challenge to Proposition 209, which banned affirmative action, the use of race, ethnicity, and gender in admitting students to public colleges and universities. This appears to be the final nail in the coffin unless a case like one from Michigan reaches the Supreme Court. A precedent is set that could then modify or overturn Prop 209. But as the plaintiffs in the case said, the enrollment of minorities at the University of California has dropped sharply since Prop 209 went into effect. And here's the number for you. It has plummeted by 50% since the year that 209 was adopted. And it says here, although blacks, Latinos, and Native Americans comprise about half of California's high school graduates, they make up only 19.5% of the current freshman class at UC Berkeley. It is white, 30%, and Asian, 48%. So that's a real setback for inclusion and for fights against discrimination. Meanwhile, a right-wing group has conducted what they call an in-depth study, and they claim that lefties run amok in the University of California system, a hotbed of leftist faculty and politically correct thinking. And some of this can be explained by the kind of people who are attracted to certain disciplines. And if you lean Republican, there's a good chance that if you go to graduate school, it's going to be the law or picking up a business degree, an MBA. maybe accounting, maybe economics, but those are the fields, engineering, that Republicans tend to populate. And in the social sciences, like political science, law, and those that relate to social justice, it's understandable that those who lean left are attracted to those fields. But to say that because, for example, someone is a Democrat or someone is a liberal, that they can't teach a fair course, that they can't challenge their students on issues even that they hold dear, even that they have biases about, I think is an affront to the intellectual honesty and independence of all people who choose to become university instructors or professors. Do you remember Curveball? He was used by the Bush administration to legitimize the invasion of Iraq in 2003. Curveball gave an interview in Britain over the weekend. We now know his name. It's Janabi. Rafid Ahmed Alwan al-Janabi. And in the interview, he is asked if he lied. And he simply says yes. Speaking in a two-part series starting on BBC Two tomorrow, he says none of what he put forward was true about mobile weapon labs and that sort of thing. And when he's asked, we went to war in Iraq on a lie, and that lie was your lie, he simply says yes. And we have an admission from Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who was Colin Powell's chief of staff when Powell was Secretary of State in the first Bush administration, and a man who has been respectably honest about the wrongdoing that occurred around him and Powell's ineffectiveness in challenging all that. He says, yeah, I brought the White House team in to do the graphics. Remember the PowerPoint with a mobile weapons lab? I mean, a 12-year-old could have produced that. And it says, according to this report in the UK Independent, another revelation in the television series is the real reason why the FBI swooped in on Russian spy Anna Chapman in 2010. They reveal that she got closer and closer to higher and higher ranking leadership, and that they had to bust her in what they called a honey trap. And that led to the arrest and deportation of 10 Russian spies. Also in the UK, it's very interesting, Britain is considering ramping up its electronic surveillance of British citizens. But first, they're going to talk about it. And they're going to go to Parliament and request this authority. Now, I hope that Parliament says no. But I think it's really quaint that in Britain, instead of just imposing new draconian police state measures, like we do in the United States, they're going to actually discuss it first. And here in the U.S., over the weekend, the New York Times reported the widespread practice of local police departments using the GPS tracker on your telephone, your cell phone, to locate people without bothering to get a court order. And I guess they figure, hey, if the FBI can do it with a little old national security letter, then local law enforcement can do it too. And the cell phone carriers are cashing in on law enforcement's desires. For example, it says that sometimes they charge as much as $2,200 for a full-scale wiretap of a suspect. And I learned a couple of years ago through a document dump that Facebook has a cash business with law enforcement, where if you send a subpoena to Facebook, they will track down the information on the user that you request, and then they send that law enforcement agency a bill. Isn't it nice to know that your private information can be sold to law enforcement without your opinion? Here in the Bay Area, newly disclosed intelligence gathering on Muslims shows that FBI agents said that they were involved in community outreach when they were actually collecting information on individuals simply because they are Muslim. Documents released last week by the American Civil Liberties Union showed that agents from the FBI's San Francisco office took notes on the names, viewpoints, and religious activities of Muslims, and this was when they went to these meetings claiming that it was just for friendly community outreach. Oh, boy. Here in California, a poll released over the weekend shows that many people are very concerned about the amount of information that Google and Facebook and other power websites pick up on us when we use their services. And they polled a group in California. It was done by the University of Southern California and the Times poll, the Los Angeles Times. And the question was put to people, rate on a scale of 1 to 10 whether you trust the companies to be responsible with personal data. And a rating of 10 means that you have complete trust and 0 is no trust. Well, Apple was rated highest with a score of 4.6, Google 3.8, LinkedIn 3.0. Now, this is declining, and as it declines, people are saying they trust even less. YouTube 2.8, Facebook 2.7, and the tweeters at 2.4. I think that speaks quite a bit about how much people know about the extent to which they are being tracked. And there is an effort by the Federal Trade Commission to impose a new Do Not Track standard, and of course the big web companies are not only resisting it, but they want any discussions to take place in private. And finally today, an interesting column from a Beltway centrist. I've met E.J. Dionne several times. He's a bright guy, but he's captive to Beltway groupthink, and he's a very moderate, often timid, op-ed columnist. But in his syndicated column, distributed here on April 2nd, he makes an interesting point about how the failure of Democrats to stand up to the extremes of Republicans time and time again moves the political pendulum to the right. And he uses as an example the Bowles-Simpson Deficit Reduction Commission. And as you know, President Obama didn't really embrace their findings. But that didn't stop Congress from moving to try to impose the cuts proposed by Simpson-Bowles, but not the tax increases. In fact, about half of the tax increases that have been called for are still even under discussion. And Dionne writes, note how many deficit hawks regularly trash President Obama for not endorsing Simpson-Bowles while they continue to praise Ryan, even though Ryan voted to kill Simpson-Bowles when he was a member of the commission. He writes, this is nuts. Yet mainstream journalism and mainstream moderates play right along. And that is how the right continues to consolidate power in this country. And of course, we are the losers. Thanks for listening to today's news and comment. This is a free podcast. Share it far and wide. And drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.